I'm Ira Flatow. Welcome to this special podcast of Science Friday from sciencefriday.com. If you believe the statistics, chances are better than 50-50 that you will suffer from some form of mental illness in your lifetime. That is the conclusion of research published this month in the Archives of General Psychiatry. For the report, which took a look at the state of mental health in America, researchers surveyed more than 9,000 people to find out what types of disorders people have, whether they got treated, and whether the care they got was appropriate. The survey is taken every year in the U.S., and it may answer some of the questions like, is there more mental illness now than there was 10 years ago? Are we getting better at treating mental disorders? Joining me now to talk more about it is my guest, Ronald Kessler. He's professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Med School. He joins us from the campus in Boston. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Kessler.
Thanks for having me.
You surveyed 9,000 people about their mental health and found a whole bunch of different related illnesses.
That's right, we did.
Tell us about what you found. Yeah.
Well, we found that, as you said at the onset, about half the population meets criteria for at least some mental disorder at some point in their life. But I think it's important to put this in context. If I told you that 99% of the population had a physical health problem at some time in their life, you wouldn't blink an eye at that, because there are things like hangnails and splinters and common colds and so forth. And the same is true in the world of mental health problems. To say that a person suffers from a mental illness doesn't mean they're psychotic. There are many people who have minor phobias, who for 3 or 4 weeks get depressed after they move from one town to another or break up with a relationship. Perhaps they have some panic problems for a month or two after they get into a life-threatening automobile accident. But most of these things are very minor. They're self-limiting. They go away on their own. And they're the stuff of day-to-day life that we all experience at some time or another.
If you asked a man whether he was under stress, and you asked a woman, or if you asked men and women, hey, you know, are you suffering some sort of problem mentally, I would expect that men would try to be more macho about this and might not fess up to it. Was that reflected in your survey?
It's true that men are more likely to see emotional problems as embarrassing than women are. But we, as you can imagine, being concerned about that kind of stuff, develop special procedures to ask these things in ways that people feel comfortable responding to. Nonetheless, despite that, it is the case that women have somewhat higher rates of anxiety and depression than men. On the other hand, men have higher rates of alcohol and drug problems and acting out disorders than women do. On balance, men and women have pretty similar proportions of having any significant emotional problem.
And during, let's say, a yearly or bi-yearly, whenever people get their physicals, do their doctors, when they sit across the table from their patients, ask them about these things?
By and large, no. Most of the people who go to primary care physicians for mental health problems nowadays do so because there's been so much more direct-to-consumer advertisement over the past few years that they're aware of treatments being available, particularly medications. And we found in these kind of surveys that people with emotional problems are much more interested in getting help with a pill than with sitting down and talking to a psychotherapist. So more and more primary care physicians find people coming and asking for that kind of help. But the physicians themselves very seldom seek it out.
So they're missing an opportunity here.
That's right. Although, again, how much of an opportunity is being missed is unclear, because the research also shows that the people who get treatment from primary care physicians in many cases are not getting adequate treatment, either because they're getting the wrong kind of medication, they get an inadequate dose, or in many cases, when they start treatment, they drop out before they get to a point of having a therapeutic course of treatment.
I guess the point I'm trying to get to is, if I'm at my doctor and you know, I say, you know, my shoulder really hurts me here during a checkup. And he'll look at it, whatever. He say, you know, this is sort of beyond me. I'm going to send you to a specialist to get, you know, an MRI or something like that. I'm hearing you saying that doesn't happen about mental illness in a doctor's office. He's not going to say, you know, I've got a psychiatrist or someone I'm going to refer you to. That doesn't happen too often if you talk about these problems.
Well, it actually something a little more formal than that happens often. As you might or might not be aware, there's something called mental health carve-out companies in the United States that in many cases, the insurance contract that the patient has makes it impossible for the primary care physician to treat these people, and they're required to refer. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if they try to give treatment for mental health problems, the insurance company doesn't pay them. So there's a built-in disconnect between the primary care system and the specialty care system in a lot of cases, which in the minds of a number of health policy analysts lead to less coordination in care, less likelihood to get into care. On the other hand, those systems have come into place because purchasers are concerned about both the quality of the treatment that's provided by primary care physicians, and also they're concerned about the rising mental health care costs and would like to keep a lid on it in some ways by having these special carve-out organizations. Mm-hmm.
And in comparing the every decade, as I said in the beginning, you do the survey every 10 years. Can you compare for us what the situation was 10 years ago and how it compares to now?
Well, the prevalence of mental health problems has changed very, very little in 10 years. Pretty much the same proportion of the population meets criteria for a problem in any one year, and that's about one out of every four Americans. The proportion of the population that has a really serious problem, the kind that definitely needs treatment, that gets in the way of their life in a pretty substantial way, that's about 6% of the population, and that's been constant over a decade as well. The big change has been that about twice as many people are getting treatment for these problems now as 10 years ago.
And is that because, as you said before, they're seeing more of it on television, they're being exposed more to it?
Well, the variety of things going on. One is that people who have these problems are much more likely nowadays than a decade ago to say to us, yes, I recognize that I have a problem. And that's obviously the first important step. Mm-hmm. They're also more likely to say, I recognize that help's available, and my belief is that that help can be helpful to me. And the third thing is we're finding that people are reporting much lower levels of embarrassment, lack of willingness about talking about these things. And those changes are particularly true among younger people. So we're seeing a sort of societal change in these things that has a generational flavor to it.
Would you call this the Dr. Phil effect or something like that, where they see this on TV and they say, hey, you know, it's okay to talk about it in public?
Well, there's a lot of things going on. There are a lot of famous people who've written autobiographies and gone on talk shows and told about their terrible experiences in mental health problems and their miraculous recovery. There are stories in Time magazine and Newsweek on the front cover talking about new medications. There are shows like yours. So for one reason or another, the message is getting out to people that mental illness is an illness just like any other, that treatments are available and help's available, and it's kind of foolish for them to sit around in pain when they could be going and getting help.
Mm-hmm. Who funded your study?
The National Institute of Mental Health.
No pharmaceutical companies involved?
Yes, we have secondary support from a lot of other funders, some pharmaceutical companies, not very much money, some foundations, but about 95% of the money came from the federal government.
Mm-hmm. So what is the take-home lesson from this study, the results of the study today?
Boy, it's tough to come up with one sentence worth of results. I think if I had to encapsulated, I'd say that mental disorders is widely distributed in the population, that the major burden of mental disorders is highly concentrated in a relatively small number of people who have really serious problems. Most mm-hmm. of those people start out with these problems early in life. They wait an awful long time to get help, longer than they should in many cases. That when they get help, very often the first person they see is not effective in helping them. And if they want to get helpful help, they have mm-hmm. to stick with it and very often see two or three or four people and stay with it. But in the vast majority of cases, when they stick with it in that way, they find that they are helped in a very dramatic way that makes mm-hmm. it well worth their while to go out and get help.
Pauline in Buffalo, New York. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi.
Hi there.
Wow, first-time caller, long-time listener. I just want to say that I've had some experience with this. I just went through a little rough patch a couple of years ago, and I knew I had a problem, and I went to get some help. I went to my primary care physician, and in my experience, pills were the first thing that are thrown at you, and getting the kind of talk help that you need is not that easy to get. In fact, it's much, in my, how can I say this? It's, you have the money to spend on a psychiatrist or psychologist or that kind of talk therapy, then you get it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you're left with pills.
Yeah. Dr. Kessler?
And hopefully really good friends.
Yeah. Any reaction, Dr. Kessler?
Well, it's true that it's a lot easier to for a person to get medication than it is to get good psychotherapy, particularly in certain parts of the country. There are primary care physicians every place, but they're not mental health professionals throughout the country, particularly in rural areas of the country. The evidence is pretty clear that medication for most mental disorders is as effective as psychotherapy. The best in virtually all the studies that have done this, though, is a combination of medication and psychotherapy. And whenever it's possible to get both of those things, that's the ticket if it's possible. But as the caller says, in many cases, it's a tough thing to do. It takes a lot more time. It's more expensive. And in many parts of the country, qualified
We lost Dr. Kessler. Pauline, are you there?
I'm still here.
Why don't we try to get Dr. Kessler back? So you've had a tough time getting what you think you really need.
Well, I managed, my problems weren't that serious, and I managed to work them out myself. I'm pretty self-aware. But and I did get what I needed, but it was basically through having a good network of friends. And I did take some meds for a short period of time just to help me get back on track, and everything will be okay now.
Did your health care coverage not cover any visit to a therapist or a psychiatrist?
Correct.
Just you were not able to get that, huh?
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, and good luck to you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, we ran out of time anyhow. We want to thank Dr. Kessler for taking time to talk with us. I'm sorry he got cut off. Ronald Kessler is a professor of healthcare policy at Harvard Med School. Thanks for listening. Remember to visit sciencefriday.com for more information on this topic and every topic we talk about on Science Friday. See you next time. I'm Ira Flatow.